And you're affecting people often in a really positive way that you might not even ever know about.
Building a company from nothing is freaking hard. Us entrepreneurs are expected to deal with unimaginable challenges and somehow keep a cool head through it all. This is The Art of Entrepreneurship, and I'm your host, Jackie Hermes. I grew my company, Excelity, from 0 to 7 figures with no partners and no funding. The Art of Entrepreneurship is a show where we cut through the BS and dig into what it actually takes to start and grow a company. If you give me your time, I promise it won't be wasted. Now let's get to work.
Hello and welcome back to The Art of Entrepreneurship. Today we are talking about something that I have had many conversations about with prospects, with clients, with friends, because I think everyone should be doing it. And I think a lot of people roll their eyes at this topic, but they absolutely should not. The topic is executive visibility. Because if you are running a growing company, your revenue is up, your team is strong, you might be thinking, why exactly do I need to be out there myself? I'm not trying to be an influencer. We are in this moment where people trust people more than they trust businesses. And they want to follow people more than they want to follow businesses. I think people always trust people more than they trust businesses, but we have gone through eras where people want to follow companies. Like I remember where people waited for the latest Apple release, like it was a cult. Now it's just not quite like that. So the real question isn't, should I be posting on LinkedIn? It's actually a lot deeper than that. It's about identity and authority and whether staying invisible keeps you safe or whether it actually makes your company and your brand more fragile. We're going to get into all of this today with Jess Jensen, who is the founder of Copilot Communications. She spent 20 years inside Fortune 100 companies like Microsoft and Qualcomm leading digital and executive comms. And now she works with leaders to help them build digital presences that are clear and confident. And we talked about all of the above, essentially, and how to build your executive presence in a way that is clear, confident, and really in kind of like a tactical and doable manner, which you know I love on this podcast. So thank you, Jess, and let's get to it. So Jess, I want to start our conversation from a slightly skeptical place, which is not where I usually start on this podcast, but stick with me here. I think that a lot of execs or owners of companies that are growing, if their revenue is up, if they are starting to have a marketing function, they might say when it comes to executive influence, like, I'm not an influencer. I'm trying to build a business here. Maybe you hear this once in a while. Why does a business owner or an executive's personal visibility matter? Like, what problem is it solving?
Yeah, I appreciate that question very much. So definitely conversations that I've been in for many years around, you know, I have so many things on my plate. I'm responsible for so many different areas of the business. Why would I spend even an hour a week on this? Yeah. What's the ROI? How can I show that this is actually going to drive sales, right? You know, those kinds of questions come up. I will say that things have evolved quite a bit in the last 10 years. I mean, this was a good idea 10 years ago when I was doing it back at Qualcomm, but it's even more of a good idea now because of, well, what I'll just explain briefly over the last, decade or so. And we all feel this. This is nothing that we don't inherently know. So two things. Number one, trust in brands has declined pretty dramatically. I mean, trust in institutions, frankly, whether it's at a federal level, whether it's at a corporate level, just trust in large companies, large institutions has declined. So who do we look to trust? We look to trust people. And sometimes that comes in the shape of influencers, right? Folks that we follow that we feel like we get to know. But it absolutely can come in the shape of business leaders, right? And so I'm more apt to follow the CEO or a seasoned leader at a large company than I am to follow the company. I follow Frank Cooper. He's the CMO of Visa. I don't follow Visa. I don't really honestly care too much what Visa has to say, but I really like Frank, right? He's thoughtful. He's got a really interesting background. He does good interviews with people. He had LL Cool J on at one point. I mean, he's just an interesting guy, right?
Interesting.
I know.
LL Cool J of all people.
I know. Okay. He's got a POV on the Olympics, right? Because Visa's a big sponsor. So people are, here's another example. I don't own any Spanx or Sneax, but I love Sarah Blakely. I follow her on Instagram and LinkedIn, right? I think her, I even follow her husband now because he's a serial entrepreneur who's really fun and interesting, right? Do you know him?
Yeah, he's a very interesting guy.
Yeah, Jesse. So yeah. Again, I mean, I probably, if I do like her as much as I do, I probably should support, although I know she's sold Spanx at this point, but I don't necessarily have a heart or a relationship with those products, but I absolutely enjoy those people. So all that to say, my answer to you part one is people trust people. And so especially if you are in tech, and especially if you're in B2B tech, right, a more complicated, maybe ingredient sort of nuanced type product or service, where it's not exactly easy to explain what you make or how you solve problems in the world. The more that you build your brand around not just one, ideally it's a short handful, right? A handful of leaders. Those personalities are what people start to really fall in love with, trust, listen to, want to be educated by. So I think it's kind of it's a little bit of like a secret sauce, right? Because that is a way in that feels very human and natural for people when they might not be so sure about following a company or trusting a large corporation. The other piece that I'd mentioned, again, that's more timely over the last five, if not two, 3 years, right, is what's happening with AI, right? We talk about it every day. I can't be on a call or in a conversation where we're not talking about this. So I know. I'm sure your listeners are like, yes. But as it pertains to this conversation, we know that with the tools, the content creation specifically tools that are now available, the barrier to entry to be out there publishing and building a brand is lower than ever, right? Because you can just drop a prompt and create an image and guess what? You've got a post, you've got an editorial calendar. One of my favorite sayings is just because you can doesn't mean you should.
True.
So, not to say that we shouldn't use our favorite LLM as an editor, as a collaborator, as a researcher. I mean, it is a fantastic partner in crime. But at the end of the day, the way to cut through what now has become just this kind of cacophony of content, right? Much of which is quite mediocre at best. The way to cut through that is to allow your imperfection, your voice, your lived experience, your humanity, allow that to come through in your platform. And again, that's going to endear whoever your current or future prospects and customers are to not just you, but your company.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Whenever I find a typo in anything I publish, I'm like, well, at least they know I'm not AI.
Right. Like, it's almost a benefit now to have grammatical errors.
Yeah. I used to be mortified of a typo because, you know, I used to draft and draft and redraft. But now, especially when you're producing a certain amount of content, you can't like scrutinize every piece to the nth degree. But now it's definitely a signal that it wasn't fully produced by AI. That's for sure. When we're thinking about building authority online, I think as the influencer has gotten more popular, there have been people that have been building as like an attention signal too. And I think that's something that execs are trying to avoid. At the end of the day, does it matter if someone is building for attention or building to avoid or to build authority for their company?
Yeah. Well, I think that it shows through. Like so many things, your intent, your core goal, you can try to mask it, but often it has a way of finding itself to the surface. And so, I've worked with executives that fall into both categories. And of course, there's a lot of gray area too. But folks that truly are building that brand really for themselves and really just sort of to have... a megaphone. But they're not doing it in service of either the company, the organization, et cetera, or even in service of their team, right? Like, even if for whatever reason you thought, well, this, you know, I'm only going to be here for 3 years. Like, I don't want to attach myself too much. Now, again, if you're an executive at a or a founder, that's probably not the case. But let's just say it is. You see it as a short-term chapter. So maybe it isn't 100% in service of the company. Okay. Some of it certainly should be, but often it should also be in service of your team, right? I can guarantee that everyone that reports into you and probably folks underneath them, vendors, agencies that support your team, they're all going to follow you. They're all going to pay attention. And the more that you can shine a light on the good work they're doing, lift people up in genuine ways, it makes them feel great. It bolsters morale, and it has the halo effect of really establishing you as someone who has a heart and cares about growing good people. I think there are ways that you don't have to be 100% in service of just your business. In fact, sometimes if that's all you're talking about, that's not always the most interesting portfolio of content anyway. Mm-hmm. But other territories that we'll often talk about when we build out a narrative platform for a client is, again, things like the industry itself. What is your POV on this industry, the future, where it's headed, right? That transcends your company. That's you as a futurist, as someone who's an expert in this industry. What can you do to lift up and shine a light on others, like we just talked about? And then maybe more broad philosophical topics. What are things that you care about outside of your professional world, whether it's nonprofit charitable things that are near and dear to your heart, or it's your family, or it's cause-related stuff. We all have something, at least something outside of work that's meaningful. And usually there's a couple territories where we're comfortable sharing some of that out. And so when you add those things together, along with whatever's happening from a product or a launch or a moment in time standpoint at your company, it actually starts to really build a really nice, well-rounded 360 view of you.
Yeah. I feel like you're tiptoeing into this question already a little bit, but like, when you are working with a client and helping them build that platform, or like what their perspective is going to be, because they have their own perspective, but like how they're going to share it, what does that process look like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for asking. The first thing that's so key, and I think as marketers, this is a very natural place to start, but often business owners and founders don't have a marketing background, right? They're, deep in finance or deep in technology. Totally great. Mm-hmm. So this isn't always intuitive. But the first question we want to ask is, who is your audience? Who is your number one audience? Because it's very easy to say, well, this and this and this and this. Well, that's actually not really defining an audience.
That's everyone.
And it's that whole saying of, if you're trying to appeal to everyone, you'll appeal to no one. Mm-hmm. So define who your single most important audience is. And really not just, like gender, age, city, like actually kind of dig a little deeper. Think through, like, what are their pain points that they might want to solve? What does their competitive environment look like? What's their mindset right now, given the broader world that we're living in? Like, really kind of dig a little into the psychology if you can. And so you have a vision, a persona, sometimes we call it, of that person. Because when you go to create content, you're ideally creating content with them in mind.
All right, y'all, it's shameless plug time. I want to take a quick break to chat with you about Excelity, my full service marketing agency. For the last 12 years, we've been working closely with B2B software and service companies. Now we are expanding and looking for growth stage companies with a bold vision, but maybe lacking the marketing strategy or resources to get there. Or hey, you might have resources that just aren't working out. We definitely see that all the time. At Excelity, our team gets results and we have a ton of fun doing it. I'm sure you can tell that from listening to this podcast. So if you or someone you know is a fit, check us out at excelitymarketing.com or reach out to me directly on LinkedIn.
And I'm sure you feel this too, but you know, sometimes you read something and you can tell right away, first of all, was this written for the audience or was it really just written because I wanted to get it out, like it's just for me? Mm-hmm. But second, is it written in a way that feels that it's one-to-one communication or one-to-many? You feel that too, right?
Yeah.
And so the more that we can identify and craft a vision of that person, what their pain points, what their concerns, what their strengths are, and then we can write as if we're talking to that person, that warmth and that empathy really starts to come through in our content and, again, elevates us above all the, you know, AI crap that we're seeing right now. So that's number one. The next one really gets into some of the stuff that we just talked about a minute ago. So clarifying, often it's three editorial pillars or themes, right? So these are just categories or sort of territories that feel natural to you. They're relevant to your industry or your business. And you're interested enough in it where you could return and talk about this again and again over months. And so we define those editorial pillars together, and that really is the blueprint now for your editorial strategy and all the content that will come after, whether that's on social, like this, being interviewed in a podcast, traditional press, et cetera. We want those three topics or territories to continue to be associated with you, so you really start to be known for those themes. So that's a big next step. And then three, we start creating content, right? Let's just start making the stuff. Let's start putting it out in the world. Let's see how it lands. Cause that's the great thing with digital. In many cases, you get feedback pretty instantly. And again, like we discussed earlier, authenticity beats perfection every day of the week. In fact, it's actually kind of a way to cut through. Yeah. So I'd rather it be imperfect, and just get it out and let's just iterate from there than, you know, wait a month until you've, you know, the production is of a certain high value. And then, the other suggestion that I often make around content is to master a platform, pick your platform and master that one first. So I used to use the term peanut butter, right? Rather than peanut butter across 3, 4, 5 different territories, whether that's, again, social platforms, social plus pod, blogging, et cetera. Let's just pick one, probably the one that you already are a little bit leaned into, you feel a little more comfortable on. Right now, for a lot of founders, leaders, business owners, that's LinkedIn.
Yeah.
But it depends on your industry. You know, I've got another client where Instagram actually makes more sense because they're very consumer facing and very lifestyle oriented. So it just depends on your industry and your personality. But get good at that one. Just start to really own and build that one. And then from there, right now, we can expand into other spaces online as we're ready and as we have resources and time. And then the fifth thing I'd say is, unfortunately, I still see a fair amount of folks, they kind of get over the hump of like, what am I going to talk about? What's my voice? Who am I talking to? And they start to create content. Great. Awesome. They're finally like rolling. And even that those are big hurdles, right? To do on your own. But then they get to this place where they start to use, social in particular, as this almost this PR tool. It's very broadcasty. Mm-hmm. And I believe firmly that the true relationships, which is really, you're trying to build trust, you're trying to build relationship that will eventually convert to whatever it is that you market and sell. Those come from conversation. So I often say the relationships are in the comments, responding to comments, commenting on other people's posts, engaging in a back and forth discussion, especially if you're getting people to actually respond to you, is so key, so that it truly feels like a two-way street, not just a one-way broadcast.
Yeah, absolutely. I have met actually some of my best friends now on LinkedIn over the last 8 years. And had you told me that 8 years ago, I would have been like, no way, that is not going to happen. But it, exactly that. You start talking in the comments, you realize you you know, share a lot of interests or values, and suddenly you're talking in the DMs, and someday you're meeting in person. And, you know, I think those things definitely can happen, but they're not going to happen if you see something like this as a means to an end, you know, and they can blossom into friendships, into business partnerships, into referral relationships, into a lot of different things. So yes, I love both the system and the advice. I think are spot on. When you see people that are resistant or hesitant, do you think it's because of time constraints, or is it more like psychological? Is it fear of being criticized, misunderstood? Is it all of the above?
Yeah, I mean, definitely all of the above. I can double click a little bit on those. The fear is real. It's like so many things. Once you start doing it, some of that barrier falls, right? Because you start to see that you're either you're getting positive response, or, you know, you realize this is a little bit of fun. I kind of enjoy it. What's been fun for me is you'll show up at a physical and in real life event, and then someone will be like, "Oh, I saw that thing that you posted last month." They never commented. You didn't even know they saw it, right? But it sat with them, and it reminds you of that kind of 80-20 rule, right? 80% of us are really voyeuristic and just leaning back and watching and absorbing, and 20% are creating the content. And so this idea of all the behind the scenes DMs, or even just someone absorbing it and then later bringing it up in a conversation, none of that shows up on the feed. But there's a lot of that happening. You're affecting people often in a really positive way that you might not even ever know about. So I think that the fear starts to dissolve when you start to see that you're having a real positive effect on folks. And like any other muscle, you start just to get more confident. You know, whether it's the writing or shooting a video once in a while or the graphic side of it, you start to understand how the platform works. So the fear is real. And it's funny. I mean, I've worked with folks that are at a C-suite level at a Fortune 100 company. You would think there's all the confidence in the world. There's nothing they can't do, right? But they're human, right? They're human. And again, if they didn't grow up either online, which, you know, still a lot of folks haven't, and that are in the workforce, and or they don't have a marketing communications background, this isn't like where they lived, then it can feel still really intimidating. And so that's part of what I enjoy about the work I do. I come in as, again, Copilot's the name for a reason. Like, I love that partnership. I love being able to kind of pull out the pieces of them that maybe are beyond the surface, and then give them the confidence and kind of the tools to start to communicate and exhibit that publicly. So fear is definitely there. And then the time piece, I think that's an issue when you still aren't quite sure, how is this going to actually drive my business? Again, like, I only have so many hours, right? Time is currency. Why would I spend an hour a week on something that I could be over here, like, you know, working with my finance team or out there talking to a customer? So I think that's where you have to internalize, and it might take a little practice, but you have to internalize this idea that, you know, relationships are often where a purchase starts. And so using digital properties, like in this case, someone's hearing our voices, right? And your voice, it can be a magnet, right? It can feel warm. It can bring someone closer to you. It makes you feel human, especially if it's in your ear. It feels very intimate. And so there's lots of formats across digital properties where you can really start to build relationship and trust. And that's, you have to see it as being a farmer, right? You have to see it as, I'm sowing these seeds in the fall, and then the winter's going to come, and I may not see any activity. And then guess what? We get to spring and we start to see stuff sprouting out of the ground and we harvest. So it's a long game, but it pays off.
Mm-hmm. As are many things. When it comes to the fear piece, yes, I think we have to remember that we were once scared of most things that we are now used to and or good at, right? Like, I think about the gym that I've been going to for years now. I was terrified to walk in there. Mm-hmm. I thought that everyone that worked out there was the most in shape person on the planet, and that I was going to get the weirdest looks when I walked in there. I'm a mom. I was terrified to become a parent. I had no clue how to even hold a baby, you know, like everything that we do in the world, even running a business, everything that I do every day, mm-hmm. I had fear around. Same thing with growing a brand, posting online. There's still, even 8 years later, a little bit of fear sometimes yeah. around it or around trying new things. And we overcome that fear every day.
Yeah. And it's good for us. It's good to do yes. hard things. Like this is a whole different podcast, but there's a whole genre of things being talked about and written about around this comfort crisis that America is in, right? It's not good mm-hmm. to just be comfortable all the time. So, you know, again, you don't need to do it alone. That's part of what I think you and I both do is help people with this, but push yourself to try something a little out of your comfort zone and give it a couple months, right? You can't just figure it out overnight. But you might be surprised, like you said, how you'll look in the rearview mirror one day and be like, how, I never thought I could have done this. And look at me now.
You know, my last question, I think you may have just answered. If someone's still thinking, I'm not sure about this after listening to this conversation, what would you say to them?
Yeah. Well, thank you. So I do have a fun little a new thing that I'm launching this spring. I'm calling it Altitude, and it's a cohort of 8 people, so small group. And the whole idea is it is a branding program for founders and small business owners that, again, really want to focus in on LinkedIn in particular to differentiate themselves and, of course, their business. And all of the curriculum that I'm going to share over the course of there's 6 sessions, so 1 per week for 6 weeks, then it launches April 15th. The curriculum is based on, I've had over 50 one-on-ones with folks since last fall, all around auditing their LinkedIn and helping them build some architecture around their brand. And I've started to see a lot of patterns, as you do. When you do something 50 plus times, you see red threads. And so I was like, you know, I can keep doing these one-on-ones, that's great, but maybe it would be a little bit more fun and maybe a little more efficient to actually bring the best of the best from all these conversations into a 6-week course that's a small group cohort. So that's really what Altitude is. In the show notes, we can include a link to sign up for the waitlist. The waitlist is open. And then I'll announce it more publicly in March to everyone else to register. But I think it's a really fun way to feel both supported by other folks that are in similar situations as you and kind of learn and support each other, but also have a framework that I can offer from all of my background and experience to kind of get off the ground and not feel like you're doing it by yourself.
I love that. Well, I will include that information in the show notes. Thank you so much for being here today. And for everyone listening, share this episode with just one person who needs to hear our message today. And thank you so much, Jess. I appreciate it.